Hey, man, how you doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Did you like my authentic beginning of our conversation? It felt off the cuff.
I think it felt very organic. I thought I could do better, but yeah.
You know what? Don't even worry about it. Don't even trip, because when you come back for your next episode, after we hit it off in this one, you can start that one however you want, and that we all get a second chance in this life.
Perfect.
How are things over there? I want to say thank you for doing this, and also thank you for working around the schedule, because you and I are not really in very close to each other right now.
No, almost complete opposite time zones.
Where do I reach you from in this moment?
So I'm living in Mumbai. I've been here almost for 2 years, but yeah, so it's like a 12-hour difference for us.
Do you like Mumbai?
Not right now, not yet. I've been told that you end up loving this place.
Okay.
But not right now. I grew up in Delhi, the capital of India. And it's a Indian thing that Delhi people don't like Mumbai. Or Mumbai people don't like Delhi.
What's the rivalry? Is it like a super historic thing, or is it a current cultural thing that you guys are actually super different, or no?
I don't think it's a historic thing, but even the cultural thing has existed for a couple of years, like decades actually.
Sure.
But yeah, I don't know. I think there are things that Delhi people are proud of that you won't find in Mumbai. There are things Mumbai people are proud of you won't find in Delhi. So I guess I fit in that typical Delhi kid who doesn't like Mumbai right now. It will change with a few years.
We are going to come back to this because this is fascinating to me, especially as a white dude from America that has no context of this. Other than, I will say, I work on a TV show, and it is a documentary style TV show, and we cover a lot of people who live in India. So I'm always, and I've shot with people as well, like produced episodes in India, in Jaipur. And so I'm excited to get to that. We're going to get to that. I got to back up a little bit so that I can ask you my only question that you really kind of already answered. You said you're from Delhi, India.
Yes, I am.
So born and raised until what age, and then what brought you to North Carolina? Let's start with that.
Born and raised, I was in Delhi for first 18 years of my life. And then I moved to North Carolina for UNCSA.
In India, is 18 the standard for everybody, like finish high school, same as it is in America?
Yes. Yeah. Everyone finishes high school by their like between 17 to 19. Depending on when they got admission. It is not very typical for everyone to leave India when they're 18.
Right, of course.
I think
not.
A lot of my friends have preferred to go for masters. So when they're like 22, 23, 25, then move countries when they're younger. People do it, but it's more on the rare side, I guess.
I have like 17 questions I want to ask you at the same time, so I'm trying to sort them in my head a little bit. Can we start with this? Yeah. Let's continue down that path, and I want to get to the film thing in a second. So then what do you think sets you apart, dude? Like, why did you want to leave so quickly? Was it like a personal thing? Like, you felt like you needed to leave where you were, or more that you were drawn to somewhere else?
I think this might answer some of your questions, but I consider myself very lucky in the sense that it was very early in my life. I think I was like 13 or 14 by the time I decided film is something I want to do.
Okay.
I've recognized not everyone realizes that early, and it sometimes really helps if you recognized it that early. When I was younger, I did a bunch of things, and those things landed me to be like, oh, I like filmmaking. I want to do this.
Okay.
And then a couple of years were convincing my parents that this is what I want to do.
Man, if there's a country other than the United States that you could make the argument that film is worth your time. I think indie is a pretty strong case. I mean, you guys have a very vibrant film
industry. We do. And there are a lot of films. We are making a lot of content, web series, everything coming out. At that time...
But it was still a tough sell is my point. To your parents?
Yes, of course. Of course. I think even if it's in India or US, it's not exactly the prettiest of work industry to work in. Like, it comes with it toxicity. There's a lot at stake, a lot of money, insecurities, like so much happening. And it's not really stable, like compared to engineering or being a lawyer, I guess.
What do your parents do?
It's not a stable job. My dad is a businessman, and my mom is a housewife who used to be involved in our business, but she kind of retired.
Can I ask what business your dad's involved in?
Yeah, we have had a printing offset company since past 25 years, I think.
Printing offset, what does that mean?
So, you know, like the flyers, magazines, anything. Yeah. We don't print novels. So anything that has those like plasticky, shiny paper,
print
that.
Okay. Got it. And you said for over 25 years, your dad start that business?
Yeah. I think he was 24, 25 when he did.
Do you know why?
He used to work in a company that was doing this. He had a job in marketing after college and he was doing that a lot, and I guess he just wanted to. Like, I realized I also have a natural tendency to have my own thing, like a business mind, as I would say. And I think I get it from my dad. And I think that's the reason. It's just like, oh, we want to do something of our own.
Yeah, I appreciate that. How hard is it in India to compare to America? Maybe I don't know if you know, but how hard is it to start your own business and like do your own thing versus go work for somebody else?
I think starting it is easier. There are a lot of small businesses in India.
Right.
At every corner, everyone since years, because there are just so many people.
Right.
And we are a very old country, but it hasn't been a long time since we got independence.
Right.
So, and it's a very developing country. So there are a lot of opportunities, but a lot of people creates a lot of competition. So it's not saying that, oh, you can start a business and it will just work. There's still that rat race.
Hustle.
There's a lot of people you're competing with.
But you're entitled to pop open your lemonade stand right next to everybody else's and give it a shot.
Exactly. And I think it used to be encouraged a lot more. It's people have more stable, high-paying jobs now because of software engineering and stuff like that. Mm. But having your own business was a good thing. And I think it still is, but it was very much encouraged.
And it sounds like it's a very impressive thing that it's been going this long and your family's been successful. I mean, that's not nothing in the environment that you just described. Yeah. Am I wrong?
From where we started, yes. Because it literally started with what, $150 my dad had, and I've had a very good life. So yes, he did a very good job at it. But in India, there's also the tradition of the son or the daughter kind of taking over the business, right?
Talk to me about that structure. Do you have siblings?
I do have a younger brother.
Okay, but it's you're in first in line, right?
I am. The funny thing is, neither am I interested in that business, neither is my brother.
Damn.
So now then it's an awkward thing of what we'll do with the business, but I guess that hasn't come up yet. But yeah,
my wife's father has that problem where he's built a really an immigrant, and he's built a really vibrant, successful accounting business. And his son, I think, for a minute thought about it, tried to kind of maybe went to school a little bit, and then was like,
yeah,
I have to tell dad the bad news that I don't want to do this at all. And then my wife was never interested in it at all. So now he's like, he's in his 60s, kind of like left holding the plate of like, what do I do with this thing? Is that kind of the way your pops is looking at it?
Yeah, it is going to be that way. If not right now, maybe in the next 5 years, 10 years.
Sure.
But yeah, I never had the interest in running that business. Neither did my brother. So I think it's been a long time coming. Most of my, let's say, high school friends or like friends in Delhi or my friends who have had parents with good businesses have taken over. I think at least 90% of them have. So it is a very common thing. And I guess finding a CEO to take over the family business is not that common, at least at the scale we operate at. I guess with a multi-billion dollar company, it's easier and more sensible. But for us, it hasn't really come up.
Right.
But it's going to happen in the next few years.
How do you feel? You mentioned that you have other friends who kind of were in similar situations. You said most of them went with that opportunity. How does that make you feel about your interest in what you do? And is there a comparative game that you play of what they did versus what you did?
Not really. It's very fascinating. So I guess I'll speak a bit about the history with high school and stuff. So
sure.
I went to high school with, there were 450 students every batch, approximately. And it's a very popular high school here. They have different branches all over in India. It's called Delhi Public School, DPS. So I went to one of those. In India, the way it works is after 10th grade, you kind of have to decide between three streams that you have to study in. So one could be science, one is commerce, or one is arts. So the arts will include history, geography, political science. The commerce will include accounting, business studies, etc. And then the science will include physics, chemistry, math. The ones who are the smartest take the science. The one who are decent at studying takes commerce. And the one, it's either you are really bad at studying, you take art, or the ones who are really smart kids, but still want to do something in those study subjects, take arts. I was not good at studying, but I still took science. Because
can I pause you for 1 second? Yes. Because I want to get to what you did, but I want to comment just on that structure and the way you laid it out and then the commentary that you added, because I heard you describe this thing, which sounds also a lot like kind of like the film school structure, where you get 2 years of high school, or in this case, 2 years of school, where it's like a little less focused. But by the second, you know, you got 2 years left, we're like, you need to pick a thing so we can focus your classes. Which,
yes,
when I heard you say that about high school and everyone in Delhi Public Schools got to do this, I was like, that is great. Like, to me, I was like, and I didn't put them in an order. To me, it was like they were three equal channels of like each kid will go with their success. And then as soon as you got to the end, you're like, so the smart, medium, and dumb, that's what the thing is, period. And I was like, what? Like, I felt already crushed after I got hopeful, and then I got demolished by it.
I know. There are always rare cases of very smart kids taking art.
Sure.
The thing is, right now, India makes a lot of software engineers. To become a software engineer, you got to have science in high school.
Of course.
So that's why it just became a big thing. Like, the smartest kids get it. Like,
it says a lot about what the value set is.
Yeah, because we are a poor country and everyone wants the best for their family, to make money, to provide
absolutely
for them.
Absolutely.
And software engineering has become a stable paying job. So everyone who was smart enough, like UNCSA had portfolio review, right? We had cutoffs. So like you need to get at least 85% to go in this. You need to get at least 70 to 85% to get commerce and stuff like that.
Okay.
I didn't get 85%. So I was like, oh, what's going to happen? But I still ended up getting science because okay. I was doing a lot of cultural things. Like I was doing video editing, filmmaking, photography for my high school.
Okay.
And they were getting good press about it. So they let me take science.
Ooh, you got the hookup because you had a skill set and some charisma.
And yeah, and the teachers liked me, I think, enough. Like they would still scold me for not studying.
Right.
But they still gave me that chance to, hey, prove yourself.
So the top tier is for the smart and the clever, not just the hard workers. Also, there's other ways in, I think, your proof one way or another.
Yeah, there are. But yeah, I remember the school principal was like, oh, I want you to score at least this much in these first set of exams. I was not even close. But it's fine. I don't regret it. Those 2 years were tough. I had to study a lot. And even then, I wasn't good at it. And I was doing that to have software engineering as a backup, which sounds so dumb. That software engineering is the backup to filmmaking. It's usually the other way around, but that was the plan.
That sounds very American to me, man.
If the plan was, if I don't get into a good film school, I do engineering and then maybe see if I want to do filmmaking still.
Where else did you apply for film?
So I did not apply for film anywhere in India.
Okay.
So funny thing, I think this will connect with UNCSA. There's a UNCSA student, Ronak Kapoor. He's 2 years older than I am. So he graduated in 2020 and he's from my high school. So when I was in 10th grade, there was a photography thing happening and he was there with his uncle who was a professional photographer. And me being me and one of the like three people who were into photography, filmmaking and stuff, I was talking to him and I was like, oh, dude, I want to go study filmmaking. And he was like, oh, I just got into UNCSA. You should look into it. I was like, oh, nice. 4-5 months down the line, I was just Googling top 10 film schools in US and UNCSA popped up. And I was like, this is the school he mentioned that he got into. So I wrote it down. Then those 2 years was just studying and not being good at it. And my parents realizing that, I guess filmmaking is something he's very passionate about. So let's let him go into that. Like, yeah, we'll encourage him. We'll support him financially and emotionally. And yeah, they allowed me to pursue something that is very real. Like it is genuinely very rare for your parents to be supportive. And they were, which I'm very grateful for. And I took a gap year after high school because I stopped filmmaking because of the exams and everything. So I was like, I want to make a portfolio. So while I was taking a year to make a portfolio, I was researching schools, and it turns out UNCSA is the cheapest one in top 10 film schools in US.
That's right, it is.
And I'm not rich, so it made sense. So I applied to UNCSA, applied to few ranked above it, few ranked below it, got into few ranked above it, got into few ranked below it. UNCSA was the cheapest out of all of them.
Right.
And also because I got to know about UNCSA 2 years ago, I visited their website a lot. So it felt familiar.
Absolutely. And
yeah, like when I got that email that, you got into UNCSA, I was like, this is what I have to do. I still couldn't afford UNCSA, but I definitely couldn't afford the ones that were
The other ones were impossible.
Exactly. So I was like, I only applied if they gave me a scholarship, and they didn't. Right. Not enough. So UNCSA just made it work. And I'm very glad I chose UNCSA, honestly.
How'd you end up dealing with the fact that you didn't have enough money to go?
Sorry?
You said that you only got a certain amount of scholarship, but you didn't get a full ride to NCSA.
Oh, I didn't get anything for to NCSA. Yeah, so it was like a student loan structure thing and support from my parents and grandfather.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I definitely had an option to go to a college for with a full ride. I didn't choose it. I do think about it, what it would be like if I did go to it, but I honestly don't regret choosing to go there. I genuinely think it was a very good decision.
Good. Good. Well, I'm glad you feel that way. It's definitely a huge risk. It also, I think, is interesting when you describe the high school system the way you do, and you kind of put arts on the bottom, and then you still ended up in the science, but then you ended up majoring in arts out of the country.
Yeah.
How did that go over with your friend group when you're like, I'm going to go to the States and I'm going to go to film school?
All of my friends were supportive. Like,
were they jealous?
All of them were. Maybe one or two of them, but I don't think so. Those kids were smart. They are smart.
They were excited to do their shit.
Yeah, of course.
Right.
And I was never good at studying, and they were very supportive.
You found something. Thank Christ.
Exactly.
Or, you know, whatever.
And I found it very early on. So they always knew that Ojus is doing this.
Yes.
Like, oh, he's making a small short film in school cafeteria. Might as well just go and see. So I had very good friends. They were very supportive since the beginning.
You know what I think goes a long way with this? Because you talk about how important this is. First of all, I want to point out, I think it's a very interesting thing about you. You seem to have a tremendous amount of gratitude in your spirit. It just seems to go with you in the way that you talk about the people in your life, the opportunities you've had, and even the way that you found the things that you care about, which I think goes a long way, man. It's going to keep you young for a long time. Gratitude is so important. So that's a cool thing. Also, I think it's interesting that you talk about the support that you got from your parents and from your friend group, pretty much without having to fight too hard for it. Like, they kind of already were willing to be like, yeah, sure. And I think that that's related to, you tell me what you think. I think it's related to the fact that your desire to do this was aligned with action and demonstration of that desire, as opposed to someone who just like quietly, secretly wanted to be a filmmaker for years, but never really did anything. After the thing in the cafeteria and all the things and the projects when you're like, I'm going to go to film school, everyone's like, I hope you haven't been just doing all of this for no reason. That makes so much sense. And you're not working on the other stuff. So clearly this is your thing. And so it all adds up, and that's great for you.
Yeah. You can't be all talk and no action. Right. And
I mean, you can be, and it goes not great for you.
Yeah. The thing, there's one thing I left out. I'll add now is
okay.
My it makes sense. Like, if I was in my dad's position, I would do the same. Like, my dad was like, I think you should do software engineering. It's more stable. You get paid. Everyone is doing it, and they sometimes earn more than a businessman, right? And it's a less stressful job. It just made sense. My mom, on the other hand, was like, do whatever your heart desires. But both of them loved making me try things. And I also loved trying things. So since I was a kid, I did karate. I danced for like 6 years. I played lawn tennis. I did all sorts of things.
That's cool, man. I was into
painting and art, and I left all of those things. I love trying new things and leaving them. I think a lot of people do that too. But I think I was 11 or 12 when I had the opportunity to go to National School of Drama. It's like the government-run school of drama here. And they do a program for kids, which is like 6 months long. And I got to do that 3 years in a row. And that's nice. When I realized I do not like acting. I like directing. And I was 13 when I realized this. It's very young. And my cousin, who's a documentary filmmaker, got a Canon 5D Mark III. And I was just so fascinated by it. I took pictures with it. And that's when it clicked. I was like, oh, this is this. I was just so passionate about it. And then I did VFX for 2-3 years. Didn't love it that much. But I just kept doing things surrounding that. So in like high school, I was going for inter-school video editing competitions, sometimes Photoshop, photography competitions, stuff like that. So it always, I think it was just a slow burn. Like my parents saw it coming like 5 years before it happened. Right. So did my friends. So like they knew this was going to happen. It wasn't official until I took a gap year and applied to film schools. But yeah, I think by that time, you kind of just see the signs that, okay, this is going to happen.
What is your relationship to storytelling in your art form?
It has changed. I think it changes for every artist, every filmmaker, every couple of years. It has changed a lot. Back then, I was just fascinated by it, like everyone is, with thinking of like, oh, I'm going to make a film. And that kept me going. With time, I started realizing that, oh, there are a lot of stories that exist in India, and they're not told. Why not try that? And I think I was in 9th or 10th grade when I started doing that. So it changed over time. And like my dad, my grandfather, who my grandparents lived with us. So my grandfather was an administrative head for Lalit Kala Academy. So it's like the official art organization in India. It's very big. The biggest painters put their exhibitions there. So I always was also... Literally where I grew up, it's called Bharti Artist Colony. Like there are 50 houses. All of them used to be occupied by painters, sculptors, dancers, like traditional. So I grew up in that. I saw art a lot around me. I was always fascinated by visiting these 65-year-old painters who have canvases from the floor to the ceiling, and they're painting on a ladder. And I don't know how much stories I got from it, but that fascination as a kid still is there. And it was just like something that made me realize that, oh, I want to do this. Even if you take inspiration from them. And then you take inspiration from the stories that are happening around you. And I think all... and then depending on what the mental state you are in, what's going on with your life, you kind of combine everything. And I think that decides the stories you want to make and the stories you're interested in. And of course, that has changed over the years.
What stories are you interested in right now?
I just wrote a short film that is my current passion project that I'm working on. It's going to go into pre-production soon.
Nice.
And it's a very
personal story. That's a big thing.
Yeah, it took a long time to finish that script. But currently, so I work as a cinematographer full time, right?
Great.
I always knew this. Yeah. I always knew this, but a lot of people who've been in Mumbai for a long time told me that you should have passion projects. I think it's one of the best advices I got.
Yeah.
Because there will be times when you'll be unemployed for 6 months and people around you will be doing amazing stuff and you'll feel left out. You might want to leave the industry. and you kind of just gotta be at it. Like, you never know when something comes up, literally. Right. And I think that's when passion projects really help. They keep you grounded. They keep you passionate about your work. And I realized that, and I started doing that. And I wrote like 18 three-liner things of the stories I wanted to tell. These are stories that I've collected over the years. Like, they are sitting in my notes app or in a previous notebook. And I just compiled them together. And I was like, oh, which I want to start with this story. It's kind of just like an instinct, I think. Yeah. Like, and I think all filmmakers decide to make stories that are personal to them. I'm the same way. So I am doing that. I like watching horror films very much. I would like to make horror films. But it's not saying that, oh, I only want to make horror films. I just want to make projects that I would like to watch and make me passionate about those. But yeah.
Can I pitch you an idea that I just had based on something that you told me?
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah. I'll never write it, but it's your thing to do. So here's the story, right? The story is about a painting that's three stories tall. Right. Oh. And it's about these people who keep trying to finish it, but the painting is cursed because when people go to the top to try to finish it, they fall off and die. And so then someone else comes along and they're like, oh, I got to finish this painting. It's not done yet. And they go on the top, but then they die. And so it's this cursed thing of no one can finish the top part of this painting.
Yeah. You kind of have to have some message around it, but it does feel like a fun idea.
I'm not a horror guy, so I'm just throwing people off a ladder. You're gonna have to weave some symbolism into this thematically. Exactly. That's not my area.
But I like the idea. Thank you for the pitch.
It's yours. It's all yours, buddy. No, I love that, and I think that's inspiring. I think it's it also seems like you have a pretty clear relationship to your inspiration and to your work, which I think is very good. A lot of people who have been out of school for like 25 minutes, like yourself, I'm being hyperbolic, of course, are less direct. What are you doing full time as a cinematographer? What does that mean?
Well, I say full time. I don't work that often.
You are paying your bills with this work, though, was your articulation?
Yeah. So last year I was doing color grading on the side to pay the bills.
Okay, great. Good work.
In past few months, I've kind of decreased that. And I'm getting more jobs to shoot stuff, which is very fun. When I moved to Mumbai, I didn't know anyone. I literally didn't know anyone in the city. And then I also didn't know anyone in the industry. So it was a very risky move to decide to leave the UNCSA alumni network and move to my country again. Right. It was a gut feeling. I like to listen to my gut. I did it.
Did you want to go, or was this like a visa thing?
No. So international students get a year after they've graduated to find a job. I didn't stay even for that. A lot of people told me I should, maybe. But I didn't, when I came to UNCSA, I didn't know if I wanted to stay in US or not. That was my parents' expectation.
Wow. After, and they were cool with that or no?
Well, it obviously took a bit convincing that I'm going to come back. But like, they were not against it. They just wanted to understand it.
Right.
The more time I spent in US, the more I realized that I might want to go to India.
Why?
And work there. It was to do with a lot of things, personal and professional. Like, obviously, being closer to family and stuff like that does play some part in it. But just work-wise, it just felt right. I wanted to work here. I wanted to tell stories here. Not saying that I don't want to work in US. I would love to.
I'm not looking to instigate a which country is better. I'm just curious what inspired you to go one way or the other.
I also realized that all these industries are becoming more global.
That's right.
And they are going to keep becoming more global. And it's becoming less and less about where you live. It still matters. Yes, of course it does. But I was like, if I can work in India and maybe also work in US, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
But right now, with the headspace I'm in, I want to work in India. I want to work with people who are here. I want to tell stories that exist here. It is a growing business and we do make a lot of stuff. I wanted to be a part of that.
There's never been a better time to be in other places. I respect that. I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So I came here, didn't know anyone, had no idea what to do, didn't even know how to make friends. Like, how do you make friends as an adult?
Right.
If you, especially right out of college, because in college you end up making such amazing friends, then you're like, I don't know what to do. So that took a while. It was a slow start and it still is. And I don't mind it. I made some amazing friends since I've been here. One of the things I did was just visited a lot of film festivals, and that's where I met people who are like me. And it helps. Becoming friends with people who like the same stuff as you really helps.
Right. Yeah, it makes a huge difference. It makes it it makes it a completely different life. You know, we don't always put our focus on that. I mean, for me, I'm originally from Texas. I went to school in North Carolina and also lived in New York on and off. But when I moved to LA, it was like two people. And I knew people all over town, but I never saw them and it wasn't all at once. And we had no reason to all be in the same place. And so you're lucky if that develops into anything. And I think it takes a very steady patience to say, I'm going to build like from an island, trying to go get one piece of wood for the house every day to go stack it up. It really takes that kind of wherewithal to stick with it.
I learned so much in past 1.5-2 years of being here, especially about how important networking can be. Because you also want to work with people you can be friends with. I don't think anyone wants to work with assholes.
Well, no.
But you also want to work with projects that make you passionate and not just do it because it's your friend doing it. So
if
finding
you can.
Both of them, finding both of them is difficult in the start. It gets easier by the time you know people, because then you can just call your friend and be like, oh, the studio can afford you. Why not you come on board? Before that, it's like, dude, I can't afford you. I'm so sorry.
Right.
Are you willing to bring your pay down to help me out? And it takes time. And also to find those people, it takes time. But
build that
it's
trust.
Very important. Yeah, of course. Like, you can't just ask the person you met 5 minutes ago to do sound design for your film for free.
Nah, be careful about that shit.
Exactly.
Let me back it up to the beginning, because we only have so much time and I want to get kind of full circle on this. I promise I would come back. Let's talk. I want to talk Delhi versus Mumbai. So you grew up in Delhi and then you go to North Carolina of all places on earth.
I know.
And then you're like, I don't even want my free year. I'm going back to India. But you go to Mumbai, you don't go to Delhi. What goes into this decision?
Is
Mumbai where's the center of like Bollywood and the industry?
Bollywood that you've learned is Mumbai. Yes.
Okay. There we go.
That's
is
why.
It like the, in that way, it makes it kind of the Los Angeles of India in the film
spectrum
of things?
I'm literally surrounded by actors. I go to the bar down the road, it's all filmmakers. I go to the next restaurant, it's all filmmakers. It's
did not know that.
A very good place in Mumbai. So UNCSA year 3, I had plans to move to New York to work there. Everyone was doing that. It is a great place to work. I was going to use that 1 year after graduation to work there. But also that was the time when I realized I might not want to stay here. So I was like, what do I do? I finally decided I'm not going to use my 1 year in New York kind of a thing, even though it sounded amazing. And I told my parents I'm going to move to Mumbai. So I went home first after graduation. I took all my stuff. Like I had like 3 luggage bags and 4 big boxes of stuff. I flew to Delhi, went home.
It's and far.
Then I think a week from Mumbai to Delhi.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a 2.5 hour flight.
Yeah, so far enough. So like Austin to LA. Yeah. Oh, I lost you for 1 second.
Hello?
Hold on. All right. It froze for a second, but I think we're back. We were talking about how it's far away. Yeah, we're all good.
Yeah. It is far away. Finding a house here is not easy. Maybe even more difficult than New York. Definitely more difficult than New York. And I went to Delhi and I was like, oh, I got to find a place to move in to Mumbai. So I kept visiting Mumbai the next month. I visited like 3 times a week each time to look for places. Yeah. So I was mostly in Mumbai, just in Airbnbs. And then I found the apartment I'm in and I moved. I moved within a month. Yeah.
Got it. And you were saying that there's a bit of a us versus them. Yeah. Is it a friendly vibe or is it kind of an actual fuck those people? Excuse my language for anyone listening.
It is more friendly vibe.
Okay.
It has existed a lot. I guess some people can be aggressive about it, but it is a more friendly vibe. Like Delhi people love their food. I take their side. I don't think Mumbai food is amazing.
Right.
They are always like good food places, but if you're comparing the broad things, Delhi food is better.
Does it feel like a New York, LA kind of thing? Could you compare it to another thing? What is the big difference?
I've thought about it. I have slightly compared it to New York, LA thing when I'm explaining to my friends in US how it works.
Right.
But not exactly, but yeah, it works.
Like, of course, it wouldn't Mumbai be the same things, but...
Like Mumbai rent is 3 times more expensive than Delhi. So that always comes up.
Right.
New York rent is also more expensive. Not 3 times, but it is. And you end up living in matchboxes.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure LA people love to throw that in New Yorkers' face, right?
We do. Well, it's cost the same, but you get more for it.
Exactly. And the subway things, the drive, like, it's the same thing.
There's little stuff in each city.
Exactly. And yeah, like, you just throw that at each other whenever this conversation comes up.
So if you're a hack comedian in the city of Mumbai, you're getting on stage being like, so I just got back from Delhi and let me tell you, all the things they do differently. Yep. Am I right? And people in Mumbai are like, they are the worst.
Yeah. It's very much like that. Yes.
It's so funny how that's the same almost everywhere in the world, right? Everybody kind of has a Mumbai and a Delhi or a New York and an LA, or even if it's just like Austin and Dallas, something small and local like that. They're always like, ugh, those idiots. They always
I've done it more internationally too. Like my college roommate is from London. So we do it with London and New York all the time.
We do it with London and LA. Good cities to do that with.
Exactly, like LA, New York, London, Mumbai, other places where work is for us. And these are the places we've considered living in.
Yeah.
And you have to think about a lot when you consider living somewhere, especially down the line. So, like, I have regular conversations with UNCSF friends. Like, we FaceTime once every 2 months at least. This thing comes up. Everyone has been, like, people have been in New York for 2 years now, right? I've graduated 2 years ago. So it is the time when we are like, do we like the city we are living in? Do I want to keep working here? Do I maybe want to try LA? does LA sound better to me? And this is the time when you kind of like reflect if your life is the way you thought it would be after graduation.
It sounds like you like where you're at.
I don't think, I was speaking about this just yesterday with a friend. I don't consider myself a Delhi person. I don't consider myself a Mumbai person. I don't consider myself a North Carolina or New York person, right? So I don't necessarily belong anywhere.
He's a citizen of the earth.
I heard people say it. It sounds so fucking dumb.
It's so pretentious and awful.
I know. I honestly want to belong somewhere, like have a home ground, but it's okay if I don't right now. I've been traveling a bunch and I don't love doing it, but it's work. So it helps me put things in perspective. Like, yes, Mumbai has amazing work opportunities, but can I live here 15 years later? Can you have a family here? Can you still afford to have a family here with the rent prices? So there are a lot of like, do I want to move to New York someday? I miss my friends. There's good work happening there. Can I move there? So these are the things that some, like a lot of international students consider too. Like my friend in London, he thought about moving to LA. Now he's not thinking about moving to LA. Or he is still is thinking about moving to LA.
Right.
So especially with international students, it comes up a lot.
I think one of the cool things too about this, and like you said, the globalization of our business is a beautiful thing, because one of the things I think we've found with the combination of the pandemic and the writer's strike is we've seen what these big asteroid size, you know, impacts cause and how it ripples through things. And one of the things we've found out is there's a tremendous amount of this work that can be done remotely, but there's also a tremendous amount, more maybe than we thought, that cannot and maybe should not be done remotely. Maybe the audio guy should actually be there. And these things that we have figured out what can and can't be done, what makes it even easier than it's ever been, dude, is to be in all of these places and to kind of establish, I think of it like a video. You ever play a video game, man, where there's like a globe and they're like, all right, man, go to the next level. And they like zip around the globe. And there's only like five cities that you can really go to. They make it look like you can travel the globe. But if you just click right, it goes all the way to fucking Paris. So it's like there's only those five places. I feel like that's kind of how it is when you're in an industry, any industry. Globally, there's like these centers to where you could be.
Yeah.
And you don't, in this day and age, have to fully be in one place. You can kind of have some roots so that one day later, if you do like the idea of London, dude, you're on FaceTime with like people in London every other couple months. You're building a relationship, a network of roots that are there. And so that's the kind of the cool thing, is you don't even have to make your mind up about 15 years.
Yeah. And if you can afford to travel to these places every few months, I would recommend it, because you end up building community. Like, I would have never had friends I have in Mumbai if I didn't actually live here, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's the same. Like, if I go to London, live there for a year or two or 6 months even, I will end up making a community there. And I've learned it's the community that hires you, not, yes, your portfolio might do something for you. And it does.
You're so right.
But people are like, oh, just seemed like a nice guy and his work is also good. Let's ask him if his dates are open. And that's how it usually works. So you want to have people like you in different places if you want to work in different places.
That's how you got in that science shit too. All the way back to that, bro. It's the same exact thing. They were like, he's a nice guy. And you know, look, he's doing the thing. So let's give him a fucking shot, even if he didn't meet the bar, the standard, whatever thing we thought was the rule.
I survived through UNCSA with the same thing too, so I think you are on something.
I think you're on something, man. I think it's absolutely right, and I relate to you tremendously in that I have gone through life as well. And I think a lot of people at School of the Arts probably collects people like this, not meaning to, but people who kind of found an exceptional way. And I don't mean exceptional as superior, but I mean exceptional as in like an outlier. They found an exceptional way to go through different things in their life, and found sometimes it results in a kind of arrogance where people are like, the rules don't apply to me. But also sometimes just results in people who are kind of clever. They all of a sudden realize they're in the hedge maze and like, hey, did you guys know you can just walk around? Like, there are people who don't think like that. And sometimes I think when you're younger, everyone else is trying to get through the hedge maze as fast as you possibly can. And you might try a couple times and be like, man, no matter how hard I try, I'm still slow as shit compared to like all these other guys. But none of those fast guys are paying attention to the side door. And so you catch it. And I am of the belief that you deserve to get to the end just as much as they do. And I don't consider it cheating, especially if there's no sign that says you can't take the door.
Yeah.
It's not. And just because you found another way to go about it. And you seem like that kind of guy. Like, you just, you pay attention.
And also, like, my trajectory has been slower than what I thought it might be like, right?
We all. And welcome to the club,
buddy.
It's
totally fine. Exactly. Like, as long as you're happy with what you're doing, it's okay to be slow. Like, I keep telling myself,
long.
It's not a race. It's a marathon. You be at it. You love. I think more I've realized is it's important to protect what you love doing. Sometimes you might just have series of bad, like, experiences, and you're like, am I doing what I want to do? And that really messes you up.
Right.
Like, loving something for so long and being passionate about it and taking the road that is not really that is very rare. And then doubting it again that, did I make a mistake, really hurts. So you have to be careful, a bit protective about the work you're doing, the people you're meeting, because that can really influence how you feel about yourself, your work, and where you're going next.
Yeah, it's a tough thing to balance that sensitivity, because you don't want to lose the sensitivity that led you to artistry in the first place. But at the same time, an overly sensitive artist is going to stumble to perpetually create, because you're wrapped up in what you already did and an inability to move on and just let it go and make a new thing. I think you're absolutely, you're right about that. And I think it's a very poignant thing that we breeze past a lot in this conversation is how much we're pushing ourselves. And you use an expression that really just kind of stuck out in my head. Of course, I've heard it a million times, but like the expression, like, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And I thought about that as you said it, and I was like, I totally understand what he means. But even that, somehow in my head, is like, I don't think it's a marathon either. I think we're set up for a false dichotomy there. I think it's because, and I'll tell you why, when I hear marathon, I still hear a finite race where you either like win or you beat other people or I finished. And it's not either of them for me. And I don't want to speak for anyone else. Artistry is neither a sprint nor a marathon. It is the act of walking. It is the act of hiking. It is I'm going to do it forever. This is my life. It's not like there is no, there may be interesting moments where I see things along my walk or my hike, but there is not some sort of finite check-in point coming where I measure whether or not I failed or succeeded. Like, that's not how I think about art. And I never feel behind, because I'm like, how can I be behind in an unmeasured race? There is no end or beginning.
Yeah. And I also realized that it's very okay to just pivot. Like, right now, when you're 40, when you're 50, like it's okay to be like, okay, I think I'm done with cinematography. I want to
for now
make furniture. Like it's totally fine because you're still doing something artistic, and it's okay even if you don't. Like sometimes you're like, yeah, you know what, I'm done with this. I want to be an accountant. It's totally fine as long as you're doing something that you're genuinely happy about. My friends are in the time when they're like, I think I want to become a director and not a cinematographer. And I'm like, you do it. You start writing, you start making films. I think you can do it. And you kind of have to just be okay with deciding that, okay, I think if I move away from what I've been doing past few years, it's a totally fine thing to do.
Can you imagine? Go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's been an hour since we've been talking. And before I joined this conversation, I saw a few podcast videos. I thought we'll talk a lot more about you and CSA. And we have a bit, but not really.
No, it usually doesn't come up that much on the show.
Yeah, like some of the experiences come up, but I was like, interesting. I thought we might have UNCSA more in our conversation.
The way that I put it to people is in the context of the show, I think of the guests' lives as a three-act story. The first act is before you get to school and how you get there. The second act is being there. And then the third act is how you deal with whatever happens to you while you're there. And ironically, for a show that is titled for being on campus, it is act two is the most limited act in every episode, almost always, just because it turns out to be the most esoteric. Can you imagine a world where in like 10 years you wake up and you pivot and you look yourself in the mirror and you're like, oh, my God, offset printing is dope. I want to do it bad.
I definitely cannot imagine it. Like, for a fact, I know I cannot imagine that.
You're like, unless there's one thing off the list.
Unless I'm not making any money in filmmaking and I can make shit ton of money doing offset printing, I might do it. Then, I might use that money to make a short film on the side.
Right, yeah, no, for sure you would be. And you know what? But, you wouldn't have. I tell you where you'd get the flyers and the posters for the show. I'll tell you that.
I know. Exactly. that's how I promote my film to the local people.
Of course, dude. Of course. Yeah. And the next time I've got something premiering in Delhi, you know who I'm coming to.
Yeah. You told me you were working on a documentary that has shot stuff in India. What's that about?
I can speak more to you about that off the show, but I've directed things remotely in India before that were shot on set there, but I was like a little floating head on a laptop directing it from Los Angeles, which is a bonkers thing to do. But yeah, I've worked in India, I've worked in Thailand, I've worked in Indonesia. All over the world from my office, which is just an absolutely bananas thing to be able to do. And I'm very grateful because as much as I would like to travel to some of these places, there are other places that I'm like, I don't know that I it's not like I would never want to go in my life, but to have to go for work and not vacation and like work there, I'm like, I don't know that I want to do that. I'm happy to just be on a laptop and then take my little AirPods out and go to bed.
Yeah. You get to see your family more often, right? And your
correct
friends. So I totally understand that. Of course. Believe me, I still haven't unpacked my bag because I have to leave in 6 days again. And I'm like, what's the point of even unpacking?
Sure. Where are you headed?
Back to Delhi. I have a project there, and also I kind of have to do location scouting for my short film. So if I get time from this project, I might end up doing location scouting, or I might have to go back to Delhi again later.
Awesome, man. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you got a lot of fun things, a lot of plates spinning and cool stuff on the horizon. If you are ever in the Los Angeles area for any reason, please let me know. Otherwise, let's get up after you get to work on this short film, and you can let me know how that's going.
Yeah, I will. Thank you so much for talking to me for an hour.
Thanks for talking to me, man. No, it was awesome. I really appreciate it. I love to get the perspectives across the board, obviously, but first guest, I think, from India, if not definitely the first guest on the show from India. I know, yeah, I've never recorded one directly from Mumbai, so thank you. And educational today, man. I learned quite a bit. I really appreciate you being candid with your journey and how it's worked out for you. It's awesome. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you.